This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Not everyone is careful with your personal information, which might explain why there's a victim of identity theft every 5 seconds in the U.S. Fortunately, there's LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year by visiting LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
Grandpa's here.
Hank's always helping out. Grandpa style. Now he's treating his prostate cancer with help from Xtandi enzalutamide. Xtandi 40 milligram tablets treats men with prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and responds to a medical or surgical treatment to lower testosterone. Xtandi may cause serious side effects, seizure, a brain condition called PRESS, allergic reactions, heart disease that can lead to death, falls and bone fractures, swallowing problems or choking that can lead to death. Stop Xtandi and get medical help at once if your face, tongue, lip or throat start swelling. Tell your doctor at once if you faint, have a seizure, quickly worsening headache, decreased alertness, confusion, vision problems, chest pain or discomfort, or shortness of breath. Xtandi can cause harm to an unborn baby or miscarriage. Use birth control during and 3 months after Xtandi. Common side effects include muscle and joint pain, feeling unusually tired, hot flashes, constipation, less appetite, diarrhea, high blood pressure, bleeding, falls, fractures, and headache. Talk to your doctor and visit Xtandi.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to One Nation. Hope you're having a fantastic Mother's Day. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Amongst my great roster of guests, look at this. We've got Stephen Miller from the White House about his first overseas trip with the President of the United States this term. Charlie Kirk. All the craziness on college campuses, it caught me by surprise. It didn't catch him by surprise because he spent so much of his time there over the last 15 years. And Douglas Murray. The anti-Semitism in our country, stunning. He wrote a book about it. He will discuss it along with his sparring with his good buddy, Joe Rogan. But first, the fastest, most impactful monologue in America. And this week, the theme is Bounce Back.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Exactly. Everyone wanted to grade President Trump on his first 100 days.
Trump underwater on essentially everything.
The last 100 days, President Trump has made Americans less safe, less prosperous, and less free.
This is a threat to our democratic republic. He's acting like a king, a mob boss, a wannabe dictator.
It's been 100 days of disaster.
I can tell you Trump's first 100 days is a long way from FDR's record.
100 days of the Trump administration, 100 days of constitutional violations.
Exactly. Do you expect him to say anything different? It's really not fair, though. You cannot measure Donald Trump on FDR-era timelines. I've always said his agenda wasn't built to show any success in 100 days. Too many balls in the air, too many issues in America that he has pledged to fix. The key? The next 100, really the next 4 years. Look at what happened in just the last 12 days. We're already seeing major positive trends in a good way, right? Trade deals are coming in. Ice has been broken on China talks.
What we're going to do in Switzerland is we've agreed to talk, but we've got to de-escalate before we can move.
Yep, and they're de-escalating. Oh, by the way, our borders remain rock solid. Remember, Joe Biden said that was impossible. More and more gang members are being rounded up and arrested, and some are actually self-deporting, we're finding out. Attorney General Pam Bondi announced the largest fentanyl bust in our nation's history.
They seized 3 million fentanyl pills in that raid, 49 firearms, and almost $5 million in cash was seized as a result of this raid. Six of them were illegal aliens, all of them Sinaloa cartel members, worst of the worst, and Donald Trump took them off the streets.
Yep, and so did the Attorney General. And even with the federal workforce cuts that we saw, the job numbers remain surprisingly strong. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be smooth over the next 100 days or even the last 4 years, the next 4 years. But change and course correction takes time, even for Trump. And there's always the unexpected. I mean, for example, who really thought that India and Pakistan would be on the brink of an all-out war this week, calling the president for help?
I know both. We get along with both countries very well, good relationships with both, and I want to see it stop. And if I can do anything to help, I will be there.
Probably will. There's always the unknown. But the real test is how you deal with it. To know what you want and don't waver even when surrounded by doubters.
Why Britain and why now? And you described this deal as a full and comprehensive deal. And yet we've just heard from Mr. Mandelson, it's the end of the beginning. Clearly, there's much more work still to do. Yeah. With respect, are you overstating the reach and significance of this deal because you're a president who needs a result at a difficult time?
Do you believe this clown? They come in with a trade deal and he doesn't think it's big enough. Don't forget other weekly wins. They're not the biggest, but they matter. Washington, D.C. gets the NFL draft. It'll be huge for that city. America gets the World Cup. They announced their committee to formulate the whole thing. It'll take over your summer next year. And the Cardinals actually gave the world an American Pope. Now, for President Trump, he's not stopping to check his report card anyway. He's packing for an overseas trip. Too much to do, only 4 years to do it.
I love it when a plan comes together.
All right, so what is next? Let's ask the perfect guy. He is the White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy and Homeland Security Advisor, Stephen Miller. Stephen, great to see you. Something tells
Thank
me
you
were
friend.
Not rattled on the negative, some of the negative coverage on 100 days.
Well, quite the opposite. The president's first 100 days were the most successful, impactful, extraordinary first 100 days that we've seen in modern presidential history. We inherited a world on fire. Now we're pursuing peace deals all across the world. President Trump inherited an open border and mass invasion. Now the invasion has been turned back, and the border is the most secure it's been in American history, and large-scale record deportations are underway. We inherited a stranglehold on the production of American energy. Now we are producing American energy like never before. Oil, shale, coal, natural gas. Permitting has been cut from 10 years to 28 days. Instead of overregulating, we're now deregulating, issuing an executive order saying we're going to get rid of 10 regulations for every new regulation. We've got DEI out of government, diversity, equity, and inclusion. We are fighting radical left indoctrination, K-12 and higher education. President Trump has men out of women's sports. He has trans ideology out of our government, out of our schools. He has the military back to focusing on warfighting and lethality, not crazy woke ideology. I could keep going.
Right.
We have never had a 100 days like this. And the liars in the media, the same people who try to cheer for the weaponization of the justice system for 4 years to persecute President Trump, we expect them to lie and slant and smear while we are going to celebrate the golden age of America, Brian.
I hear you. Does it surprise you that 92% of the coverage on the Trump administration has been negative?
No, because that's who we're fighting against, Brian. It's that corrupt media enterprise, the one who held Joe Biden blameless when Afghanistan turned to hell, when 13 service members were needlessly murdered, when an innocent family in Afghanistan was droned to death by the Biden administration, when Russia invaded Ukraine on Joe Biden's watch, not Donald Trump's watch, when we had record-setting inflation for 4 straight years,
right,
and, of course, when our country was invaded by every criminal gang on planet Earth. They protected and celebrated and encouraged Joe Biden in that, and they tried to keep President Trump out of the White House. And now,
right,
look who's in the White House behind me. It's President Trump. He won, they lost, and they're bitter about it.
So the courts are the only thing really stopping your agenda from going forward, because the Democrats, they would even admit it, they have not found their footing. And I think I saw something this week. You put out the Enemies Aliens Act and say we're being invaded. We're going to have to ship these people back to their countries. And courts are stopping it. Two courts have stopped it. And we say, look, it's been organized from Venezuela. They have sent their gang members here in an organized fashion to create chaos and kill some of their dissidents. And out of nowhere, the National Intelligence Council leaked a memo that says you're not telling the truth. While Venezuela's permissive environment enables TDA to operate, the Maduro regime probably does not have a policy of cooperating with TDA and is not formally directing TDA movements. The intelligence agencies hurting your case. Is this something where the intel agency is trying to do policy again, like it's happened not only with Trump, but with Bush?
What you're talking about are a handful of disgruntled bureaucrats who, I can assure you, all voted for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, sitting in an office in Washington, D.C., pounding away at their keyboards, trying to undermine President Trump. They don't have a single ounce of actual intelligence at all to back up that smear job that they leaked to the press. What we actually have is a rock-solid, ironclad FBI assessment that actually collects intelligence on the Maduro regime, that actually collects intelligence on their operatives trained to rock in the United States, that says not only is TDA acting as an arm of the Venezuelan government, not only are they under the direction of the Maduro regime, but that Train Nicaragua is actively plotting assassination attempts on regime critics in the United States. Right. Think about that, Brian. A foreign regime has sent a terrorist network to our soil to assassinate our citizens. This is terrifying. And it's exactly why President Trump invoked the Alien Enemies Act. And it's exactly why we expect to prevail in short order and get these criminal gangs out of our country. I am not shocked in the least that the same intelligence bureaucrats who made up Russia collusion, who made up the Ukraine hoax, who schemed and plotted for 8 years are trying to undermine this president again, but democracy will prevail.
All right, so that is true, and your lawyer is going to work on that. The Department of Justice will and try to mount that case. But the big story, and it's taken a lot of your time, is the big, beautiful bill, trying to get the 2017 tax cuts renewed and then add additional cuts. President put on Truth Social, and I'll just paraphrase, he essentially says, I'm open to raising the TOPS tax rate. Ultimately, I'm not saying it has to be, but I'll be open to doing it. That's really, I haven't heard a Republican talk about raising taxes in a long time. What does that say about how hard it is to cut in this environment?
Well, Brian, what the president is saying is, you know, the 2017 tax cut temporarily lowered tax rates across the board, and that, of course, is what is expiring right now. And that's why the Congress has to not only extend the Trump tax cuts, but expand the Trump tax cuts with no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security, and so on. What the president has said is that he'd be open to not extending the lower tax rate for a very small subset of wealthy filers, but he said that's up to Congress and they can figure it out. Of course, we'd be grateful for the extra revenue, which can be used to support further reductions for the working and middle class, but it's going to be based on what ultimately can get 218 votes, what can get 50 votes. The most important fact about this tax bill is that it will be the single largest package of tax cuts and reforms in American history. And again, for the working and middle class, the tax cuts that we're talking about here are going to be absolute game changers for their quality of life and for their incomes.
Stephen Miller, thanks so much. It's going to be an exciting time. The House wants to get it done by Memorial Day, the Senate by 4th of July. That'll be something else to celebrate. Stephen Miller,
it's going to be amazing.
All right. Look forward to seeing you back stateside after your overseas
thanks,
trip.
Brian.
All right. Stephen Miller, thank you.
Thank you.
Knowing what you know now, do you think you would have beat him?
Yeah, he still got 7 million fewer votes.
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people didn't show up. Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two, they're very close in those toss-up states. It was it wasn't a slam dunk. He's had the worst 100 days any president's ever had.
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah.
I would not say honesty's been a strong point.
Right. His 100 days that are bad is actually a compliment if he doesn't like them. But the Bidens are back. Joe's out of the basement and as confused as ever, in my view. So why now? Why stumble through the spotlight again, over and over again? Political analyst Mark Halperin says he's got the answer. Quote, a source very familiar with the Bidens informed him that the Biden ink has collapsed. The trough is empty. The spigot's turned off. Biden Inc. needs a source of revenue. And I guess this is it. Desperate times, desperate interviews. And joining us now is the host of Charlie Kirk, The Charlie Kirk Show. It's a fantastic podcast. He's also the president and founder of Turning Point, Charlie Kirk. Charlie, great to see you. So you think that Joe Biden would have won had he had just not unfortunately dropped out?
No, I don't. I think President Trump would have also defeated him, probably even by even more than former Vice President Kamala Harris. I'll tell you, it was very interesting in that interview just seeing him struggle through the most easy and simple questions. On display was one of the greatest examples of media malpractice in the last couple decades. People wonder why the media is at all-time low trust levels. This is why. Not only did the media refuse to cover Joe Biden's mental decline, they covered it up. And President Trump deserves a lot of credit for trusting his instincts for that June debate. Remember, there was a lot of controversy around that. President Trump, Joe Biden, why are they debating so early? Why are they debating in June? Is it going to help Joe Biden out? In reality, of course, it got Joe Biden out of the race, but it did something even more important than that, is it showed the American people how dishonest the mainstream media has become, about how they called us names. They smeared us, they slandered us, they canceled us, they censored us because we were noticing Joe Biden's mental decline. He was not even able to answer a question about his mental decline without Jill Biden interjecting. So I think President Trump deserves credit for a lot of things, including exposing the frauds the mainstream media had become the last couple of years.
I mean, this week we're going to get our fourth book on how bad and how detached Joe Biden was. But you know what it shows you, Charlie? It's not swing and a miss. Too bad. I wish I could have a do-over. They just put him out again, and they still didn't call him out on The View. If one of them had any integrity, they would say, Mr. President, you have kind of lost your fastball.
Correct.
You seem much slower. You don't seem like the same guy. Here's a clip of you 10 years ago. Do you see the difference?
That's right. That's right. And they act as if we are dumb and stupid and not to believe our lying eyes. And on top of that, Joe Biden had a disgraceful last 24 hours of his presidency that almost nobody challenges him on. There might be like, oh, a softball here. He pardoned his entire family.
I know.
He preemptively pardoned Anthony Fauci. He pardoned the entire January 6th committee. And they're trying to attack Donald Trump as a threat to democracy and a dictator. That was one of the most egregious ends to a presidency in American history, if not the most egregious, with no questions, right, acting as if he is some sort of wonderful darling of the media. I hope somebody finally gets a chance to question him on that.
I know you're on another college campus. We're set to do another event, so you're very familiar with the anti-Semitism that is raging throughout this country. It was
terrible.
Front and center again. But now with the Ivies, with the president of Haverford, who got an F from the ADL, from the Anti-Defamation League, because they just let it run rampant and there's no penalty. Here's Congressman Randy Fine. He's the Republican who took over for Michael Waltz, taking on Wendy Raymond, the president. Watch.
He'll work on your campus. Does he still work there?
Yes, he does.
He does. And he also said something, said the state of Israel must be dismantled and society denazified. Zionism is Nazism, is fascism. Zionisms are racists. Why would you hire someone who says that October 7th was a beautiful sight to wake up to? Why would you hire that person?
I am very sorry that I have had someone on the faculty that would espouse those kinds of views.
Good. You can go back and you can fire him.
She read that, Charlie. She wrote that out on her cards, the president of a university.
Of course. And what people need to understand is that what you see expressed on these college campuses, the anti-Semitism, the Jew hatred, the anti-Americanism, the anti-Western values, it is an outgrowth of the professors. That's what I loved about that line of questioning. It's one thing to have bad policies like Harvard has, or have bad policies like Columbia. We need to go a level deeper. It's the faculty themselves that need to be removed from these universities and from these colleges. They are the ones that are instilling the anti-Semitic, anti-Western views on these kids that we are then subsidizing through federal grants, federal aid, medical research, and federal student loans. We need a complete recalibration of how we view higher education in this country. The anti-Americanism and anti-Semitism is not a bug. It is a feature of higher education in this country.
Charlie, there was a time when you walked on campus and it'd be nonstop protests. Now you got huge crowds. They're getting bigger and bigger. Younger people are going for Republicans. Younger people are going for the MAGA crowd. But the other thing that I love that you do is you engage people that disagree in a coolness and a calmness, and it exposes them. Here's an example.
So without looking at the phone, look at me. What should the penalty be for breaking into America?
I think there should be a system where it's more merit-based. So if this person...
No, penalty. So what is the penalty? So what
yeah, well,
what should
it's
happen
a, it's
to
a
you?
Felon. It's not a felony. It's a misdemeanor.
No, it is. So that's not true. It's 8 it, USC
1312. It's a misdemeanor, like the... Sorry. Wait, sorry. Can I check my phone real quick? I apologize. Fine. Or there is some kind of like public service that this person does. Or you send them back. But
send them back. I agree. That's all we should
do. Okay.
Why is that important to you, to get people that disagree with you?
Well, first of all, that's what colleges should be, is that it should be an open mic type environment where people feel free to express their views regardless of what they are. We are trying to actually bring back college. We're trying to bring back what the academy used to be, not a place of an island of totalitarianism, not a place of repression and intimidation and censorship, but a place of an open marketplace of ideas. We go to these college campuses for just a couple hours. We draw thousands of students, and we have real discussions, real dialogue in the pursuit of truth. If college campuses were to be that way, then people would actually then get closer to conservative values. These professors, instead, they don't believe that free speech is a value worth embracing because it's a threat to the left-wing worldview, is that the only ideas that they want are left-wing ideas. Their idea of diversity is everyone looks different but thinks the same. We are trying to bring back the spirit of open debate and free speech to college campuses. And because of that, we're seeing huge success. And remember, the most loyal group for President Trump is Gen Z right now, voters 18 to 22. And we're seeing it every single day on college campuses.
You're 100% right. But for the 78-year-old, he must be stunned. His message is resonating big time with the next generation. Charlie Kirk, thanks so much. Check out his podcast and always check out Turning Point. Doing great stuff. Charlie, thanks. Meanwhile, catch me on tour. I'm going to head to the stage. History, Liberty, and Laughs, sponsored by Fox Nation. First stop, June 21st, Dayton, Ohio. It's going to be great. Then the next month, August 23rd, in Dallas, Texas. Huge venue. Don't let me down. Richmond, Virginia, September 27th. Yes, after Labor Day. There is life after Labor Day. BrianKilmeade.com. And yes, you can wear white. And of course, Fox Nation sponsors. And still to come on this show, 60 Minutes gets nominated for an Emmy for their botched Kamala Harris interview that's getting them sued. Don't miss the media moments that matter. But first, the Israeli-Gaza debate rages on as Douglas Murray responds to criticism from his buddy, Joe Rogan.
And this idea that expert, like Douglas Murray, I love him dearly. I think he's a brilliant man. Got a degree in English, bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. Okay, he's not an expert either. Unless we're talking about Shakespeare, shut the up. If you want, I'll tell you anything you want to know.
After everybody leaves. Mom Jeep.
Have you been to the crossing points?
No.
When were you last there at all?
I've never been.
You've never been?
Well, am I not allowed to talk about it now?
So if you're going to spend a year and a half talking about a place, you should at least do the courtesy of visiting it.
All right. I just think this is a non-argument.
You're talking about crossing points, and not only have you never been to a crossing point in either Egypt or in Israel, but you've never even been to the region.
So a heated debate over the Israel-Hamas conflict is getting a lot of attention. Joe Rogan inviting comedian Dave Smith and journalist Douglas Murray on his podcast. They're both great friends of his. And after Murray expressed frustration over some of Rogan's guests making controversial, unmoored claims, historical claims, he took them on. Without having any expertise was the problem, and they couldn't back up any of their statements. And it's doing some damage because Joe Rogan is so popular. This week, Rogan attacking Murray, maybe in a playful way, after that debate.
He used tactics rather than facts. So the tactic was an appeal to experts like that. And there was also saying that the coverage was imbalanced because I didn't have enough people that were pro-Israel. But then I thought about it afterwards. I'm like, I had quite a few. And then the thing of asking Dave, you've never been. And this idea that expert, like Douglas Murray, I love him dearly. I think he's a brilliant man. Got a degree in English, bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. Okay, he's not an expert either. Unless we're talking about Shakespeare, shut the up.
Really? Here to respond, the author of a great book on democracies and death cults, Israel and the Future of Civilization. Here to respond, Doug, so intense, lasts for a couple hours, right? Mm-hmm. Your thoughts about the follow-up with Joe just said.
It's disappointing, I have to say, because Joe has been a friend. I think he's a very talented podcaster. But as I said in that podcast, he spent the last few years inviting friends of his, mainly comedians, to talk about what I think are actually very serious issues. The war in Ukraine, the war in Israel, the invasion of Israel by Hamas, the slaughter of Israelis by Hamas, and Israel's attempt to get back the hostages. I don't think any of these are laughing matters, and I don't think they can be litigated over especially well by comedians. People are free to say whatever they want, but what I was surprised by, I have to say, was that I was making a very specific point, which is you don't have to have a degree in anything. You don't have to just speak if you're some kind of expert. But you know what? Expertise and experience do still matter in this world. If I know very little about MMA, If I was to go on Joe Rogan's podcast and talk for 3 hours about MMA and reveal how little I knew and that I haven't been to a match, I think he'd notice and he'd call me out for BS. Well, the war in Israel, like the war in Ukraine, is much more serious than an MMA match, and it's much more complicated. So why should there be standards that apply to an MMA fight, right, and they don't apply to a war zone? I go to these places, I see it, and I report back for my readers.
You write a book about it.
I write a book about it. I write endless first-hand accounts in the New York Post and elsewhere. And if people think it's elitist to say, actually, there are journalists have let lots of people down, there are still journalistic standards. If you're going to write about a conflict, you should know the country you're in. You should try to know about the conflict. You should, and at least have some darn humility. This comedian seems to think he knows, right, how to save 250 Israeli hostages being held in a booby-trapped terrorist entity like Gaza, and how to kill the leadership of Hamas and capture them. He doesn't know anything about that. I have the humility to say I'm going to go and report on it and say what I see. But I don't tell them how to fight a war.
But also to know the history and perspective. It didn't just happen the other day. There's been times and chances of them to have peace and live side by side. Here's an example. Bill Clinton frustratingly talked about this and the effort he made to bring peace. And look at the Democratic president's frustration backing up your argument.
He walked away from a Palestinian state with a capital in East Jerusalem, 96% of the West Bank, 4% of Israel, to make up for the 4% that the settlers occupied that were beyond the borders in the 67 war. You walk away from these once-in-a-lifetime peace opportunities, and you can't complain 25 years later when the doors weren't all still open and all the possibilities weren't still there. You can't do it.
Can't do it. They had an opportunity. They walked away. Mm-hmm. Then when they were given Gaza, it wasn't an open-air prison. There was opportunity, but they shot rockets instead of putting out hands of peace. And they elected a terrorist group instead of a democratic group or anything assembling an organization.
Yeah, I mean, everyone talks about a Palestinian state this, Palestinian state that. Palestinians are given lots of opportunities before 1948, in 1948, and for decades since to create a state of their own. They were given the chance in 2005 when not just every living Jew, but every dead Jew in a cemetery in Gaza was withdrawn from the Gaza by the IDF. The Palestinians had a chance then in Gaza to create a state. And what did they do? They elected a terrorist group, Hamas. The Hamas ruled Gaza for 18 years, and after 18 years of firing rockets at their neighbors, which, of course, the pro-Hamas type thing, oh, you know, it's irresistible. How could we not fire rockets at our neighbors? Yet so many people do avoid firing rockets at their neighbors, don't they? But nevertheless, after 18 years, they invade Israel with thousands and thousands of terrorists going and raping and beheading and killing innocent civilians across the south of Israel. My book is an attempt to explain, first of all, what happened on October the 7th, because a lot of people still don't know. Secondly, a first-hand account of Israel's response, the military response of the IDF. But the third thing that the book is about is this crucial question I keep having. It came up a bit on the Rogan thing. It's come up a lot when I've been on campuses and elsewhere, which is, why are there so many people here in America who, in a choice between a democracy like Israel and a death cult like Hamas, decide that it's either difficult to choose or decide to throw their lot in with the death cult?
And pick up the book, because you'll get first-hand accounts, not just Douglas Murray's opinion. He walked the encampments of Colombia. He went into Gaza. He visited Israel multiple times, and he saw what was left after the October 7th attack. Douglas, congratulations on the book and keeping your cool under fire.
It's my pleasure.
Great to see you. All right, next, the media moments that matter. Emily Austin has the honors this week. Keep it right here.
Kubota Orange Days.
Welcome to Fox News Live. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer in New York. President Trump getting set to visit the Middle East this week. The president will visit Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates during the three-country tour. The trip is tied to the president's expected announcement of his plans to begin referring to the Persian Gulf as the Gulf of Arabia. Arab nations have long pushed for the Persian Gulf, which is off the coast of Iran, to be renamed to reflect their countries. And the final stage of jury selection in the sex trafficking and racketeering trial for Sean Diddy Combs will continue Monday. Then opening arguments will begin. Prosecutors say Diddy used his fame and power to sexually abuse women over a 20-year period. If convicted on all charges, which include kidnapping and arson, Diddy could face life behind bars. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer, and back to One Nation with Brian Kilmeade.
Media moments that matter.
All right, it's everyone's favorite segment. This week, I gave all my cords, my VCR, my TV guide to Emily Austin.
Hello.
I asked you to tape everything possible. I gave you my whole tape stock. Emily, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be back.
What did you come up with?
All right, if you didn't hate Hollywood enough,
right.
Kamala Harris's 60 Minutes interview is now nominated for an Emmy. I'm going to play for you why Trump was upset. You have the edited version and the unedited version.
Let's watch.
It seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
It seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
We're not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is why Donald Trump is suing CBS for defamation, and they're in talks to do a settlement. But the Emmys, and ultimate, really, screw you, says I'm giving an Emmy for them for that edit.
I mean, I can't even further boycott it if I tried to. It's been so unbearable to watch over the past few years. But let me just get this straight. So CBS airs an interview that was edited so manipulatively becomes central to the president's lawsuit. But instead of accountability, now you have an Emmy nomination. It's like a trophy for propaganda.
Yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, you did something else. You've been looking at the oligarchy tour.
Oh, right. Here we go. Bernie Sanders says he can't wait in line at the airport when he was pressed about using a private jet during fighting his oligarchy tour.
Yep.
I mean, listen to this. He basically made millions talking about inequality, but then he soars feet over all of the working class he claims he's fighting for.
That's a heck of a carbon footprint. Watch.
You run a campaign and you do 3 or 4 or 5 rallies in a week. The only way you can get around to talk to 30,000 people. Think I'm going to be sitting on a waiting line at United, waiting, you know, what, 30,000 people are waiting? That's the only way you can get around. No apologies for that. That's what campaign travel is about. We've done it in the past. We're going to do it in the future.
Sorry, Mr. Socialist. You should apologize for that. Everybody waits in United, and it's not 30,000 people. You get in, you get off. I don't even think you should be going first class if you're Mr. Socialist, should you?
Nothing screams power to the people like sipping champagne on a G5.
Absolutely, with AOC. But you're not even done after two. After all, I gave you my entire tape stock, Emily. Did you come up with a third example?
CBS News' Tony DeCoupel leaves co-hosts stunned by the way he describes the papal conclave.
The one thing we know they're not doing is checking Instagram because their devices have all been confiscated.
I believe the kids call it raw dogging it if you're going to go through a long period of time with no electronic device.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Well, they're of a certain age, so they might be used to it.
What?
Yikes. Do you even know what that means, Ryan?
I've been looking it up. I've been Googling a lot. I've been talking to a lot of younger people. I'm pretty sure you shouldn't be saying that in describing the conclave.
No, when I read it in the prompter, I said, no, there's no way. There has to be a mistake because you can't be using frat boy terminology
right.
when you're discussing the next pope. I mean, it's just so disrespectful.
But, I mean, does it help his show get attention?
No, it wasn't cool. It wasn't edgy. It was just controversial and completely disrespectful.
But you know who is cool and edgy? Emily Austin.
Brian Kilmeade.
All right. Thank you for following up with that. That was not in the prompter. Emily, great to see you. Fantastic.
Good to see you.
All right, meanwhile, next, the always funny Zorna Garg is here with how she went from a stay-at-home mom to a stand-up comedian in America. Don't move.
He's drinking. The dog asked me to have lemon water. But is there alcohol in there? Yes, but also lemon and water.
No, I don't want to look.
There's some things I'll just never get used to in this country. Like here, people love to say I love you all the time and to everybody.
Like, I love you in the morning. I love you in the evening. Going to school, I love you. Came home from work, I love you. Empty the dishwasher. Really love you. I'm telling you right now, because you're starting college this fall, you will be surrounded by kids who are going to say, find your bliss. No. Remember this moment and remember that I killed it right here. Nobody needs their bliss. Everybody needs a doctor.
Absolutely, and money. That's the always funny Zarna Garg, who has had quite the unconventional rise to fame. From India to a stay-at-home mom to an award-winning comedian, Zarna Garg has garnered the attention of stars like Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, and was even cast in the star-studded Dunkin' Donuts commercial.
I'm more than just a snack. I am the full meal.
Excuse me, I'm not your therapist. You're a Dunkin'. And this is not a snack. It's a $6 meal deal.
I was once described as hauntingly symmetrical. I carry that burden in silence.
You sound like you need some hash browns. And a hug.
$6, huh? How about for a selfie?
Who are you?
Comedian, author of the New York Times bestseller of this book, This American Woman, a one-in-a-billion memoir. Zarna Garg, welcome. We always love having you on. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I love being on your show.
What I think is so important about what you write is your origin story and how unlikely it was. The moment I think you made a decision in your life when you were told by your dad, you're 14, I think it's time for you to get married. You weren't for that and forever fractured your relationship, but enabled you maybe in many ways to come to America and reach your potential.
I mean, in every way. Yeah, I think had I not lost the relationship with my dad, I would have just lived there and followed a very conventional life path for my type of kid.
In India, in your culture, did they even understand comedians?
No, they still
don't. It's not a job, right?
No, it's not a job. They still don't. I come from a family of doctors.
Right.
So when comics say things like, this is the hardest job, the brain surgeons in my family are like, oh, my God, do they know what we do? Do these right. people know what we do? Because they have no understanding. They think you just stand there and just randomly tell jokes.
Right.
And people pay money for that in America.
And they do. And how did it start for you? How did you go from somebody with a fantastic sense of humor making in America to being somebody who wants to be on stage?
I don't think I have a fantastic sense of humor. I don't think I'm funny at all. My kids think I'm funny. Everything I say, I mean.
Right.
When I'm on stage saying, stop following your bliss, I mean it. Because nobody found their bliss in, like, lung transplant surgery.
Right.
But that's what we need.
Right.
We do not need another person who's, like, loves watching Netflix.
Right. In India, you say, like, in America, we always try to find happiness. In India, no one has time to be happy.
No.
You're too busy working. Achieving.
Yes. Find money.
So you're a parent. Perhaps it's your greatest skill. What are some of the principles of parenting?
Oh, never, ever ask your kids how they're feeling.
Why?
That is rule number one.
Because you don't care.
Nothing good ever follows that question. Nobody ever said, I'm feeling great. I won the lottery. No. You ask anybody how they're feeling, it's like, I have a headache, I have a stomach ache, this happened at my job. So never in our house, we're not allowed to ask, what can I do for you? None of those things. We start every day with, what are we going to get done today?
Understood. It's about accomplishments. You also talk about being a parent, but you also talk about being a wife. Here's Zarna on marriage.
This is what you would call a catch. I know this because his mother reminds me. Every day. And I get asked a lot, were you guys arranged? We were gonna be, but then online dating was really new 24 years ago. And we found each other online. So his mom was so mad at him. My dad was so upset. You know, a match made in heaven. Neither side of the family spoke to us for a long time. We refer to that as the honeymoon period.
That's great because it's so different from the culture you came from.
Yeah.
Well, what do you want people to get out of your story?
I want them to know that if I can do it, anybody can. Honestly, like, look at me. There's nothing special about me at all. I just kept
going. Until people meet you, but...
not my mother-in-law.
Okay. Right?
Not my mother-in-law. She has a whole list of things that I do wrong.
Right.
There's a WhatsApp channel people can subscribe to.
Right.
Just about my flaws. But I really believe that there's nothing special about me. I kept trying. I failed at many businesses before I tried comedy. Because I was a stay-at-home mom for many, many years, just trying to get back into the workforce. When you're home with kids constantly, you feel like the world is moving on without you. And I really felt... So I was like, how do I get back to work? What job can I get? What can I do to be around adults and making money? And I failed at everything until comedy hit. My kids sent me to an open mic on a dare. But I want people to know that whatever they want to try, the random crazy thing that they've been thinking about, they should do it because it's in there and they can make it happen.
And nobody has to tell you, a first-generation immigrant, this is a great country, right?
Oh, I mean, there's no other place. There's no place like America.
Go see, check out Zarna. She'll be at the Irvine Improv in Irvine, California from the on June 26th. And also on June 12th, you'll be at Belly Last Festival in Los Angeles, right?
Yes.
All right. Fantastic. Zarna, great to see you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. You got it. Meanwhile, don't forget to email onenation@fox.com. Sean did exactly that. And he said this. Nice to see Mrs. Kilmeade and your huge fluffy dog. It's called Great Pyrenees. Hope it was a great birthday, sir. I appreciate it. And it was very nice of them to come up and surprise me at the end of the show on Fox and Friends. And there they are. And a happy Mother's Day to Dawn, who's watching on this Mother's Day. And I appreciate all you do, sir, to your children. And they don't say it enough, and they probably will. And also to all the moms out there watching. Up next, your sneak peek at the week. Don't move.
The future is here.
Before we go, your sneak peek at the week. President Trump taking his first international trip since taking office, traveling to the Middle East. You got Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and UAE. It's going to be exciting. Probably get some deals out of that. Trump also could announce a plan to lower prescription drug costs. That could be the big announcement he's been teasing us about. Opening statements expected in the Diddy trial after the jury acceded to having a hard time picking people out. I'm sure you've noticed. Good news. NFL schedule cuts released this week, 2025. We know one thing for sure. It's going to be Eagles and Chiefs in a rematch at some point. I think the Eagles are going to kill them even worse this time. And it pains me to say that. NBA and NHL playoffs continue. And it's been an exciting postseason. That is it for us tonight. Radio show, 6 to 9, Monday through Friday. I know you love it. Amongst my guests, Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, as well as Brian Still. A lot going on with the Big Beautiful Bill. Be sure to catch me on Fox and Friends every single day, but especially in a matter of hours from 6 to 9. And please follow me on social media. I got this exclusive thing called the Culper Club on Locals. And my last before I go is to urge you to stay within yourself. And since we're late at night and early in the morning, I asked you to get undressed. Soon I'll ask you to get dressed.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.